those of you who are new to Prairie or maybe visiting here today, I'd like to introduce myself and my co-lay minister. I'm Pat Watkins, and I'm sharing the lay ministry with Marty Drafkin. You want to? We're finishing up our lay ministry for the month of November, and we'll be back, hopefully, kick us all out in January for the next part of this lay ministry. And our theme is work. And this morning, we're going to discuss the other side of that coin, which is not working. And I'd like to make a little disclaimer here, and that is that there are many, many reasons why people do not work. We obviously are not able to and have no intention of touching on all those reasons this morning, so I'm just sticking to people, the not working in the sense of involuntary unemployment. Those people who are looking for jobs, who don't have jobs, and who want jobs. And what we'd like to know, some of the things, what do people do when they're out of work? How do they feel about themselves, and how do they feel about their lives? And what is it like in American society not to work? We have a panel here, which will be talking about that, and we also have a couple of readings that we're going to do from people outside of Prairie who have gone through the non-work experience. I think someone here has a reading by a gentleman by the name of Gus, who's a 49-year-old executive who had a few words to say about what it was like to be without a job.
Gus had been in a management position in manufacturing, and he's been out of work for about 2 months. Things were going along pretty good until last year when there were three reorganizations in my firm. One night, 7 weeks ago, I had a job when I left the office. The next day, my job was even taken. I really like this city and I want to stay here, but there are very, very few jobs available here that are similar to what I was doing. I suppose that if someone said, here's your ideal job, but it's in Casper, Wyoming, I don't know if I would take it. I might take a less than ideal job just to stay here.
That sounds familiar.
I would neither.
The unemployment people, they say, there's nothing here. You have to take a big cut in wages and start over at a lower level. I have a problem with that, too. But when I ask what lower level jobs are available, they want to know how low a salary I'll accept. And then they won't give me a crack at those jobs because I'm overqualified.
Another reason I have a dilemma is that if I were to take just any job, I could be awfully pissed about all the people I know who are younger and not so talented, not so experienced, who'd be making more. I guess I'd be bitter. I don't know. I am pissed. I can't say I'm not. To be told that the reason I lost my job was because I made too much money, and in the same sentence to be told that I was worth more and that I wasn't being paid what I ought to be getting was really something to hear. That's a hell of a note when you work hard to get there. Then when you get there, you can't stay there because you worked hard to get there.
I guess as time passes, my emotions get more noticeable. I've been aware of some down days, but normally I'm pretty high-spirited. If I thought it would help, I'd get plenty emotional, but who's going to listen? Who gives a damn? My wife cares, but what good does that do? She's not in a position to do much about it. What I'm going through now is lonely. No one else can feel what I feel. There's no one else can feel the disappointment from having lost a job because you did a good job. And there's no one else can feel the frustration from not being able to duplicate the job I lost. You can have some empathy, I can, for other people who've been there, but to really get inside, it's a lonely business.
And you can sense from what was read here that this particular person and many people who are unemployed are bitter, and there's also a sense of shame attached to that. This is a product of what we like to call our American work ethic, our Puritan work ethic. But that's kind of a delusion because in actuality, only about 60% of the population is actually in the workforce. But this work ethic is still so strong in us that it does all kinds of terrible things to people, and it has overwhelming social consequences. Now, I don't plan to give you a lecture with a lot of statistics, but I kind of thought this was interesting, and this is the only set I'll throw out. There was a study done for the Congressional Joint Economic Committee in 1976, and what they showed in that study was that as the unemployment rate went up by 1.5%, the suicide rate went up by something like 6%, and the homicide rate went up by 8%. Unemployment was the cause of 1,500 suicides, 1,700 murders, 26,000 cardiovascular and kidney disease cases, 870 deaths from cirrhosis. I don't know how they got all this information. 51,000 deaths from other causes. And then they claimed that unemployment alone was the cause of over 7,600 admissions to state prisons and over 5,000 admissions to mental hospitals. So often we think, you know, that just being broke is the only outcome of being unemployed, and that certainly is not the case. Let's turn to our panel here. We have a panel of Prairie people who very kindly volunteered to talk to us, who've been in this situation. I think a good example of how painful unemployment could be was that several of the panel members said to me, I don't know whether I can talk about that or not because it was so painful. But they did offer to do so. Would you like to describe the circumstances that left you in a state of unemployment? We're going to ask them to let us know how long they were unemployed, the circumstances, if they took another job, what kind of job they took and what that meant to them. Start with you, Jody.
Sure. Happened to me twice. First time was when I had decided to stay in a foreign country and couldn't find work because I was not a citizen. And so, I mean, that was in my own making. I didn't have to go there in the first place, right? Came back to this country and spent some time without employment. But the one I would really like to describe to you is what occurred to me here in Madison about 10 years ago. I had experienced teacher burnout. I had taught in public schools for 14 years and experienced a job overload along with taking care of a child by myself, and had put on 8 Broadway musicals in the public schools, which meant a lot of night work. And I burned out, and I guess what I really did, without any advice and any human service people really available to me and not a very sympathetic administrator, I just put myself into manual labor therapy and went to barber school. some of you know me or have known me since that time. I finished a diploma at MATC and was unable to find an apprenticeship, and that's by that time I had run out of my savings. I had used up, gotten loans from MATC, so I really entered unemployment with no reserves whatsoever. I am blocking the time period. I don't know at this point how long I was unemployed. I can't remember how long it was. It was probably maybe 3 months, I don't know, but which is relatively little compared to folks who have looked for jobs for a long, long period of time. But I also had another family member dependent on me, and at that time I had $90 coming in from renting some property. I had $100 coming in basically from doing housework, and $150 rent payment, so that kind of gives you some idea of what the scene was like. The scene was real scary, and I'll get into that later. I knew an administrator in state social services who helped me find an LTE job, Carl Martin, whom some of you knew before his death. And so I got an LTE job, probably it was at minimum wage, there were no benefits. I had 2 college degrees. The job required someone who was conscientious, could read and sit still. That's about it.
Marty?
Okay. Well, my bane has always been that I've worked for the state for a number of years, but my bane has always been to sort of not be on what would be called hard money. I've always been on soft money, federal grants, which is true of many of us in the state system, and still am. I worked for the University of Wisconsin Extension for 6 years. The area that I work in is in regard to county jails, development of training programs and development programs for jail officers and jail administrators, and development of policy and procedures for jails, something I really like. And, you know, certainly would want to be able to feel secure about. So, you know, during that time, I was on one federal grant after another, and most of which I wrote myself, and, you know, for the grant applications. And eventually, that, you know, those ran out, and so I was, for a period of 18 months between 82 and 84, beginning of 84, I was, you know, not working for the state, was without a formal job, but continuing to do the things that I had done as a consultant basis, which is nice, and I enjoyed it a lot. But of course, there's not the steady income, there's not the benefits, and all those nice things that we who work for the government come to enjoy. So that was a scary thing for me, but in terms of, and if, you know, needless to say, there wasn't a steady income coming in, although I was making money as a consultant doing the same things that I had been doing, training and particularly working with county jails to develop policy and procedure manuals. And actually, I enjoyed being on my own much more than I enjoyed working for the government, because I don't like doing that. I, you know, don't like working for anybody else, and particularly bureaucracies. I mean, I just find that distasteful, and I would prefer not to do it. I like them. I like the money that they give me, and I like the benefits that they give me, and those kind of things. But that's about all I like about it. Frankly, I really like being a consultant, and if I had my choice, I would, you know, if it was lucrative enough on a steady basis, I'd, you know, I'd do that without a moments of hesitation. So, from the perspective of, you know, self-esteem and so on, the only anxieties I really had was simply lack of money. And I was making money from consulting as well as a couple of other things, photography that I was doing, and selling the Lifeline Gym, which is a little piece of exercise equipment that I sell. So I was having an income, but it wasn't a steady income. You know, it was sporadic, sometimes good, sometimes not so good. And in my own case, a big desire that I had was to stay in my field, because I cared about it a lot. You know, I really want to work in regard to jails because I care about it. You know, I want to feel that I can make some difference. So I had basically given myself, said, a couple of years to see if I could make it as a consultant in that same field, and felt at the end of it, if it was clear that I wasn't going to be able to make it financially, to have to go on to something else. So I had anxiety about that, because I really, really sincerely wanted to stay in what I was doing. I really liked it. Fortunately, after about 18 months, I did get a job with another agency of the state. But again, it's an agency that doesn't have a lot of longevity, or it doesn't have a lot of security. It's the Wisconsin Council on Criminal Justice, which is a state agency that's totally, or almost totally, federally funded. And you know how that thing goes. You know, sometimes the federal funds are large and sometimes they're small. And when they're small, it's the smallest state agency in the state bureaucracy of only about 24 employees. And it could go like that. You know, it could be gone. And all 24 of us could be gone, including myself. So, you know, I still have that kind of insecurity about that. But, it's, you know, the job itself is sort of the same kind of thing that I had been doing. And I feel very fortunate to be in that position.
Let's come back.
Okay.
A little later, and move on to Jack.
Well, I think I've had a little bit longer work and non-work experience than a good many of us here, simply because of being a little bit older. I had a good many different jobs. Many of them were due to the fact that I longed ago made up my mind which direction I was going, which was organizing in radical political parties and in union. And when you do that, you don't make much money, but you get a little bit used to it. I think the turning point, to make it very short, was Ben and I were adding it up the other day, this morning, in fact, before we came, because I forgot that we had this panel. And 10 jobs in 1 year. That's rather difficult. You wind up not having money, you have anger, frustrations, all that kind of stuff, of course. And you wait in unemployment line, all these. Well, this is just the number of the different types of jobs. Pardon?
Was there a particular job that you lost that was more dramatic, a period of unemployment than another one?
No, not particularly.
You were just constantly unemployed.
I think that Dota used a word which is quite appropriate. There's a tendency after years to block out things that were not too happy because they all ran in together. Especially the last number of years at that time when they had three small daughters and no money coming in and this kind of stuff. So
it was, a lot of it was financial.
Well, of course, a lot of the financial debt.
Well, I guess the first time I was unemployed was when I got divorced, because I had been a housewife up to that time. And then the next time was after struggling for a year with First Realty to make a go of being a real estate salesman. I'd made about $75. I had done my own driving, and I spent weekends working at the agency answering the phone. So, and to be fired from that job was that was really hard. I also lost a commission because I had listed a house and it didn't sell before my termination period, and that was really tough. I've been fired a lot of times, and I think that makes being unemployed look lovely. So what can I say? It was. In a way, it was kind of a relief to be unemployed. I didn't have to confront an awful boss or bosses, usually bosses. I think my low point was the time I took a job, though, for $2 an hour at a gift shop. And that really was the pits. That's all I want to say about that now.
Thank you. I can see, and I think all of us can see, that this is a topic that's really not very easy to talk about if you've gone through it, because there's a lot of pain involved there. Being jobless, as I mentioned before, is not just the loss of money. It's you become ill, you have emotional problems. There's a lot of fear involved in that, and I think Dota touched upon the fact that she was just plain afraid. A lot of anger and a horrible, a tremendous amount of stress. And you do, after it's all over, try to put the whole thing in the background, and you don't want to really think about it. We have another reading here, which was, I kind of liked this one. Maybe I liked it too much because it's kind of long, so bear with us. But this is about a gentleman who had a $60,000 a year job in the advertising business, and suddenly found himself. Carolyn?
I ended up on the street. When the dust settled, I had been out of the industry for close to 2 years. When I tried to get back in, I discovered that I had violated a taboo. Employment agency specifies someone actively working in a field at the moment, not someone out of work. No matter how well qualified you look on your resume, after your second year out of work, they say, there must be something wrong with this person if he hasn't been able to get a job within this. Finding a job if you're over 40 is like child adoption. An infant is placed very easily, but it's almost impossible to get a 10-year-old child adopted.
It would certainly be helpful if this society had a more realistic appraisal of the value of education. The main function of education is to lead people to expect a better deal than society has any intention of giving. Look, I would say, the main function of the educational system is to keep you off the job markets for a few years. The second function is to baffle you and exhaust you into harmlessness. Third is to convince you that you have a chance when you have none at all. But they didn't want to hear it. Education is a snare and a delusion. It's not going to solve any problems. It's one more evasion. Whenever I was baffled and I would ask some professor I respected for his opinion, he couldn't suggest anything except that I go back to school. At each major crisis, I had no solution for life's problems except to go back to grad school for one more degree. That has always been a mistake. My education limited the possibilities I would consider. I'm generally pissed that I was trained, educated, and prepared for a society that no longer exists. What I should have done was to have had the courage of my insanity and gone off with some nice girl or joined the Foreign Legion, or just written plays and not worried about the obligation of bourgeois respectability. Instead of trying so hard for so long to be sensible, I should have started acting like a lunatic from the beginning. I couldn't have turned out a whole lot worse, and at least I would have had more fun.
I couldn't resist putting that in as an educator, knowing that there are problems.
Now my life is all recreation and leisure. I set myself little projects. I was really into model airplanes, model tanks, and painting toy soldiers for a while. I was third ranked on the East Coast and among the top 10 in the world. While it's an ancient and honorable art, nobody wants to hear the rap. Besides, all my colleagues were 11 years old. More than that, there's absolutely nowhere to go with it except maybe California or to a Star Wars studio. I've been working my way through all of Shakespeare's plays, and then getting into some of the late Elizabethan and early Jacobean era playwrights. I study karate as a genuine Korean lunatic and work out hard about 3 times a week. I read with friends and work as a volunteer in the public theater. I see a lot of plays, and I see a movie once in a while. I think about the theater and worry about obscure questions. In Othello, what is Iago's rank? No one knows, and the explanations given are usually nonsensical. Obviously, anyone who can get into worrying about things like that can keep himself busy forever.
I tend to withdraw, and also a bunch of things have been cut off from me. In some circles, the first question out of a girl's mouth is, "Oh, what do you do?" If that's her first question, you know what kind of sociological theory she's groping around with, so I avoid some ways of meeting people. I went through all the usual emotions when I became unemployed. Anger, surprise, puzzlement, bafflement, despair. All the things people go through, I suppose, when they're told they have cancer. I must be going through some sort of emotional regression. Nothing drastic. But I can't think of any other explanation as to how I ended up building model airplanes. I have certain confused emotions. I have a real middle-class background, and becoming unemployed was very painful for me. It was worse than committing murder, because there might have been some provocation or excuse for that. But in my family, if someone was out of work, he just wasn't talked about. He was always under something of a cloud. So I have a vague sense of shame. I would like to work again. I guess I want that feeling of life and surprise that you get by working with other people. These days, I'm pretty much thrown upon the resources of my own imagination. Though my resources are considerable, my imagination doesn't surprise me that much anymore. I want to write. If you're past 40 and you've blown it, there's nothing else to do except writing.
This man that wrote this piece is a very good writer, obviously, and also has a great sense of humor, but I think you can also sense the anger and the bitterness and the
frustration behind what some of what he says. And I think there's some things that here that we can relate to. And I guess I'll turn to the panel again and see if they have any thoughts. And also, when the panel is finished, I'd like to get some reactions from the audience as well. First of all, that long piece in there about education. Any feelings about that? Certainly some of us who are unemployed, Rachel mentioned going back into the job, the pits was the $2 an hour job in the gift shop. Jack had 10 jobs, certainly some of them must have been jobs that did not depend upon the kind of background and education that he had, and certainly this is true for Dodie.
I guess one thing that's coming to mind is the kind of education I really needed for the work situation now wasn't needed at the time I went into the workforce. I could have had a job all over this country with my bachelor's degree. I was trained as a music teacher, and there was a shortage of music teachers at that time. And so I very naively thought it would be that way forever. And so no one trained me to network, no one trained me to utilize other people, and no one trained me to climb ladders. No one trained me to go to the right cocktail parties, and I still don't know how, so I may never get a piece. But that was a piece of my education that just didn't exist. And I too was led to believe that, you know, you just keep going on getting to more schooling, you'll become a more valuable human being to this society, and of course people will want to hire you. So, yeah.
Is the job you're doing now the one that is utilizing your educational background? How do you, if it's not, how do you feel about that?
I think it's utilizing it to a great extent. I don't think that it's... I don't think the pay and the evaluation of that job is consistent with the manner in which it utilizes my background. But it does, clearly.
You're teaching graduate students how to sing?
No. I wear several hats in the job I have, but a lot of it has to do with human relations and with students in stress. And students dealing with financial stress, students dealing, let's say, with undesirable academic records and trying to get into school. A variety of things comes through my office that I think utilizes my experience in public schools.
So it's
in education. So my overall experience in education has been very valuable in this job, yeah. Sometimes we sing, too.
How about, and who else would like to make a comment on the education process?
My own case, I'm not sure how to really approach it. I have a graduate degree in English, which really doesn't have much to do with what I'm doing now. But there's a lot of us in the state service who have liberal arts degrees and have not much to do with the specific job that they're doing. But I think a liberal arts background, per se, is helpful in any kind of a job that has to do with people. That's my view. But what's the question exactly? Do you feel
well,
that
you're... Well, the man who wrote the article was saying that education was just used to grapple you and to keep you out of the job market, oh. That it really hadn't been any help to him.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it has different...
Certainly true with English majors.
Anyone else?
Well, as is common quite often in our group, I think we look at things somewhat different than many, shall we say, run-of-the-mill people. I wasn't concerned with education. My job had nothing to do with $50,000 a year and that kind of stuff. About as far removed from that as possible, even though I did have an undergraduate degree and all that, and graduate work and all that kind of thing. One thing I did want to add, because I should make the point, when you have many, many jobs and you're fired for your political opinion and you're followed constantly from one job to the next, by FBI, and you're fired because not because of the work you do, but because of your political opinion. I don't think most people are aware of this type of thing. So you wind up with no resumes and all that kind of resume. What is that? what you do is falsify everything you possibly can in order to get a job. Otherwise, you can't get a job. And when we finally, no doubt about it, it's probably harder in many ways upon the family, especially on one's wife, than it is yourself. So when we finally get up here, and of course you falsify everything, how in the world are you going to get a job saying that you've been a union organizer, et cetera, et cetera? You're not going to get it. And I went to the Historical Society, and one of those strokes of luck was that the assistant director was a Spanish war vet. And somewhere or another, when I was talking to him, he got an idea what it was all about. And I was hired. It was just one of those things. And I'm so glad they never went on the resume, because it was just, you know, self-employed, all that kind of thing. So there's a lot of stuff going into it. But nothing about $50,000 jobs and education. It was just survival.
Any comment on, did you want to touch on that?
Well, I can't say that what I'm doing now has much to do with what my training was. I'm one of these rare creatures in Prairie. I don't have an undergraduate degree except from MATC in real estate, and I did learn a lot about business in that, which I have brought with me into the business I'm in, which is sewing. And so I know how to keep books and keep things straight, which is a real advantage.
The person who wrote the article here mentioned something has to do with social interactions, where the first thing that someone does is ask you, what do you do? And so his reaction to that was that he didn't bother with the girls because that he couldn't deal with that question. And this is certainly something that's prevalent in our society. You're introduced to someone, what do you do? And what kind of reaction might you have to that if you happen not to have a job?
None of your damn business.
Is there any kind of, does that trigger any kind of feelings?
Yeah, defensive.
Well, I think the standard reaction in Madison, because there are a lot of people unemployed in Madison, and I think I'm currently between jobs, is a good one, and then you quickly change the subject to something else. I sometimes have problems with people I've engaged in a conversation who, let's say we get involved in some kind of high-powered subject, and I feel as if I'm holding my own ground until they find out what I do or what I have done in the past, and then, and then because if I don't happen to be, although I may be an intellectual peer, if I am not a professional peer. I was at a convention at one time where this was when I was teaching music, but I was teaching music in the public schools, and I was at a convention where people were, it was the college market, and people were looking for jobs, and I was engaged in a conversation. We were doing really, having great times talking about rather obscure subject in music that I just haven't known a lot about, until a guy found out that I was a public school teacher. Literally dropped this conversation and walked away. But that's an example, but I've had that happen as I've been employed in clerical work for quite a while, and that happens, and still if someone asks me what I do, I am civil service, I'm on the clerical staff at the university, I never mention, I'm sorry to say this, because I have great respect for people who are working in clerical positions, which mine is, although I've now evolved into a position that has a lot more aspects to it. I seldom tell anyone I'm a clerical worker. And I'm defined by civil service as a clerical worker because of the treatment I have received in the past, the really shabby treatment I have received, and I just don't want to have to deal with it in a conversation.
That's why I never liked that question very much. What do you do? Because it's a very shallow kind of a thing. Because a lot of people, not everybody who asks that question, are trying to pin you down and put an identity on you by what it is that you do to make a living, which is really a very small part of an individual's identity. I think there's other things involved in that question, but like you say, I am a clerical worker. Well, that puts you in one, perspective of person, whereas I am a college professor. or I am a doctor or a lawyer, you know, then they look at you entirely different. But what does it have to do with you? It has nothing to do with you as an individual. So it's kind of a silly question. It's not easy, but I think somehow the trick is to not let people put you in that bag by allowing them to decide how they're going to feel about you by what it is that you do to make money.
Rachel's dying.
That's kind of naive on the one hand, but it's
true
on the other hand.
When people ask me what I do, I say, well, I'm Wonder Woman, and here's a picture to prove it. Then I reach into my purse, and I pull out my card and say, here, let me give you one of my cards. Wonder Woman, I do sewing and alterations. Do you have anything that you're doing? And I used to worry that I would become a bag woman, you know, and have to go around the streets and have to, you know, live hand. I will pass it around if you want.
I had a few more things I wanted to touch on as far as social interaction was concerned. Although I was only unemployed for maybe however many months as was, I have experienced a long period of being underemployed and for a while without benefits and really severe financial stress. And several things that I experienced, one thing, attending paid events was totally out of the question. And attending paid events, where I had to, you know, pay money to go someplace. And being a musician, would have been nice to have gone to a symphony, and it was sometimes painful to hear people come in. It is still painful. I still am having to deal with this because I don't have a high-paying job. People coming in and saying, well, did you hear such and such at the Civic Center? Well, I still don't have $12 to go to the Civic Center a lot of the time. And but at least if I really wanted to plan ahead and save up for it, I could do that now. There have certainly been long periods in my life where that was out of the question. Fortunately, I can entertain myself fairly well, so I mean, I'm not really hurting that much. But it's a little pain, but nonetheless, it's there. It certainly affected networking and for possibilities of career advancement. I can't go to, and certainly couldn't go to the parties where you'd meet people that might be able to introduce you to someone who could introduce you to someone who could introduce you to someone who might have a job. I didn't have a clothes to wear to such those parties. There was at one time, in my first period of unemployment, where I worked in a business where I wore the same dress for about 6 weeks straight. And I suppose I should have been glad I had a dress. I think my employer got a little tired of it, but it was clean and pressed every day. I stopped dating. I really had no emotional energy to deal with iffy, uncomfortable situations. I mean, it was taking all of my energy to keep me employed, to keep my son fed, clothed, and reasonably happy and entertained. And I just felt I had to totally surround myself with supportive people that weren't going to add any more tension to my life. And I also, I think, was just too stressed to contribute much to a relationship. And I think it was just better for all concerned that I didn't get involved with anyone. I had no money for entertaining other people, and this was really painful. People would invite me over, and you know, it's if you're invited over for steak and all you have in the refrigerator is maybe rice and a little bit of veggies, which some people are quite happy with, but nonetheless the paying back idea, which is very strong in me, not wanting to be obligated to someone else, and my friends, I think that would not have bothered them. It would have bothered me, and it still does. It was at the time, and I wanted to bring up because I think it's really important. It was the time of my period of unemployment and very low employment that I started attending Prairie. And one of the reasons I attended Prairie, I liked it, I liked the services, but also it was probably the only liberal religious organization in town that didn't have a huge budget to support. At that time, had no building to support. And I felt, although I was still subsidized by people in Prairie, I still felt that I could somewhat hold my own. I was very glad Prairie got a building. I'm still glad Prairie has a building. I love it. But I also, if right now I were in the same circumstances that I were then, and having the strong will I have to want to hold my own, I don't know what it would mean in terms of Prairie membership with regarding the financial obligation, which is minimal, I think, compared to a lot of churches.
You ask for a few bucks for playing the accordion.
Thank you for that, Rick.
Our time here is starting to get a little short, so I'll shut up and let you briefly touch on something else, and that is the residual effect of having been unemployed in the past. If any of you feel that being employed now, having perhaps your own business, as Rachel has, or a fairly secure job, which Dodie seems to have at this point, how has unemployment affected you now? Are you still living under that? Jack?
I would say the residual is anger at people in our society being unemployed. There are no good logical reason for it. And it's anger that such a society in the wealthiest country in the world should exist. And empathy for those who are poor and in that position.
It, I have a feeling and empathy for those anger before.
People
that's
who are funny. What was that?
I said I have a feeling that you had this anger even before.
Oh yes, I did. But
that's why you were.
Of course, but even more so. And Betty and myself, for example, it's only been in the last 7-8 years that we've gotten out of those kind of situations. Purely luck. And purely fortunate in the sense that when I got in the Historical Society, after all, I did have a degree and I wound up in a work that I liked as archivist and so on. And it's just one thing, just plain luck. Plus the fact that Betty had to go to work too, several times way back when we had no money coming in at all, period. 20 bucks from my dad, and it's rather embarrassing getting, especially when they don't like what you're doing. The entire family thinks it's horrible. And when they know, they feel that you can get a better job, but that's no longer true. After a while, you can't get a better job. Resume, you know, that kind of thing.
Rachel?
A feeling of anxiety that never leaves me.
I would tend to agree with that, that there's a fear that you go through when you're unemployed, that even though you get a good job, you never are secure. You never have the sense that that's going to pan out. You're constantly afraid you may lose the new job. Now, this is my sense, too, but Dodie, how do you feel?
The very first thing I wrote down when I was thinking this question was I overreact to anything that I perceive as a threat to my job. And that's caused me, I think, to overreact to some things at work that I probably perceived differently from what actually was there. I think I'm afraid to take risks that might help me advance. At one time passed up a chance for a scholarship to go on for a PhD because I didn't want to take risks either with my welfare or my son's welfare. And I didn't want my mother, who is 81 and living by herself, to think that, oh, well, here goes her daughter again at a time when, you know, she may need my help. It's probably just as well I gave up that chance, but we won't go into that. I think it's given me a deep appreciation for work and a deep appreciation for supportive friends. But that underlying fear is always there. Yeah.
I feel the same things too. I guess the one lesson that it's brought to me is just the tenuousness of a lot of things in life, including work and the ability to work, and it's associated with a lot of other things, you know, health, relationships, and so on and so forth. No guarantees of anything. But to me, the flip side of the coin of that is that you should be grateful for what you do have for as long as you have it, at least. You know, and I feel grateful that one way or the other I've been able to stay involved in an area that I really care about a lot in terms of an occupation. But I also realize that there's no guarantees I'll always be able to, because it just may not pan out that I'll be able to make a living at it, and would there have, you know, therefore have to go on to something else, which I wouldn't feel happy about, and which I would, you know, work as hard as I could to avoid. But there it is. You know, I just think that life is tenuous, and that's certainly a lesson that unemployment teaches us. Very tenuous.
Just one thing. I think that's where anger comes in, a conscious realization that people should not have to fear that way, period. And that's where the anger comes in.
Sometimes losing your job, too, seems to be, for some people, a very unfair or unjust situation. I read something the other day that someone who said that there has been more anguish and more heartache associated due to people feeling that they should get justice than for any other reason. But I think a lot of us do feel that. And I have a situation where I work right now where the maintenance person in our building has worked for this company or whoever owns the building for 20, 30 years. And he's now 60. Luckily, he's 65. At least that's what I was told. And they sold the building. They sold the building to the university, which means that they can no longer employ this man who's worked there 30 years. He has to compete for a civil service job to keep that job. Well, of course, he can't do that. So, you know, I'm sure there are many other people in that situation where there's just a sense of injustice, and then certainly that anger, because that should not happen to people. That's the kind of thing I think Jack is looking at as well, where somebody is, it's just like throwing an old shoe away. This is a human being. You don't do this with human beings. So. Okay, I think we'll draw our panel and our discussion to a close here. Maybe we have time for one or two questions from the audience or comments.
I gotta say this before I stand up for announcements, because this program makes me want to scream. It really makes me want to scream, because it gets me in touch with a lot of the anger I feel, a lot of the injustice, personal injustice I feel. I knew I was doing a good job and I was qualified for it, yet I was fired because of my political differences. And I'm still angry about that, and that was 3 years ago. And I've been unemployed all this time, fully unemployed. Well, not partially unemployed, but I was unemployed totally for a year. And full of anger about that. And I've been very, very underemployed since then. I tied in with the educational part. I went back to school because people said, I'll go back to school and get your certification to teach. There's plenty of jobs. There are no jobs around here for me teaching. I'm full of that anger. I'm full of that injustice. I'm still there. I'm still only partially employed as of January. I have no job.
Can I just make one comment about that?
Yeah.
Briefly. You know, that sort of bears on one theme that we've been wanting to discuss in our whole thing, lay ministry here about working, which is the difference between a job and an occupation to some degree. You take somebody like Jack, who, you know, talked about a situation, many different jobs. But really has had an occupation all of your life, you know, that is to say something that you care about and that you're working towards. And lots of people who have high-paying jobs don't have that. So, you know, there's something to be said for that, and maybe you're the same way.
Okay, let me get a quick comment from Carolyn, and then we're going to have to pull this to a close.
I want to say something else, but stimulated by what Lance has said. Lots of people do get fired, you might say, because of their political perspective. You may remember Kendra Campbell, I just said once I had him as a guest. Well, he's avant garde, you know, he's very well prepared, you know, that he's certainly capable. And he didn't get tenure at university because of his political beliefs, and he's had that kind of problem all along. Okay, oh, I guess what I wanted to say is I have never been unemployed, but I have been threatened with unemployment. I think I said something like that last week when I had to go to battle, you know, with the courts and the hearings and so forth and so on. But what I felt at that time, and I think you may feel, is the loss of esteem, the feeling of worthlessness, you know, this not having no value. And just feeling uncomfortable, even in the environment in which you know that it's coming. They'll give it whatever you give you, 30 days or 2 weeks or whatever. And the whole 2 weeks that you're there, perhaps, you're just feeling uncomfortable in that situation. Everybody else is going to stay on the job, and you're not going to stay on there. I think it's a feeling of a devastating low self-esteem. Secondly, the people that I know who are unemployed, and no disrespect to people who are definitely in this kind of work, most of them say, well, I'm consulting now. I'm a consultant. And rather than I'm unemployed, I'm between jobs, I'm consulting. Then one thing I've always had some quarrel with is when you're being able to distinguish what one is from what one does. And I think it's a wrong question that we ask children when we say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I've always been opposed to that. What do you want to be when you grow up? You want to be, one little child answered it correctly, I want to be a man. You know, so what you want to be from what you do should be distinguished. What do you want to do when you grow up? I want to do engineering, I want to do architect, or, you know, something like that, but that's what do you want to be?
Can I just make a point? What Dodie said made me think about our own community. So I might ask, you know, what can we do about the unemployment of our members? If we were a Mormon group, for example, mm-hmm. I think we would try to materially help our members. But we're not, right? If we tried to help Dodie that way, that she would be here. Or can we? I mean, I don't know.
I think it's worth discussion. I really think it's worth some consideration and some discussion as to how we deal. I mean, I'm in a position where I can at least hold my own, and I, having not been in that position and knowing that there are members currently in Prairie, and I think maybe at least one member who's left Prairie because of pride, I think it's worth it. Some serious discussion.
Okay, what I want to do now is light our candles. Do we have matches around?
I think there is, but I think you'll have to put wax in the bottom of the candlestick to put it up.
Well, maybe I'll just hold this candle since the service is almost over. It has to be blown out soon. Warren, if you'd like to continue.
Did you forget?
No, I purposely left the candle to the end of the service. And I have three things I'd like to say. Or have this lighting represent. Mm-hmm. Standing in front of you. Number one, I light this candle for all of the people in our country who are unemployed and who are facing some of the problems that I hope we've thought about and talked about a little bit, just even though we've only brushed the surface today. So for all of the unemployed, I light the candle. Then I would like, if I had a second candle, I would light that one for the people in our community in Prairie who have faced unemployment in the past and who face unemployment now or perhaps may face it in the future. I hope for all of these people that the new year will bring jobs that will be their New Year's present.